Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 478 for comics originally released on October 5th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is He-Man Thundercats number 1. What kind of familiarity do you have with these two properties, Drew?
They were cartoons that I watched as a young lad. I had the action figures, and I used to think they were pretty cool, man, way back then.
If you had to pick He-Man Thundercats, where would your allegiance lie?
I think I was a little bigger fan of the Thundercats.
Okay, good choice, good choice. I was going to say, I was aware of He-Man and stuff, never a huge fan of that. But Thundercats, not that I was a regular viewer or anything, it had the cooler theme song, I think the better just style and design or whatever for the characters. It worked a lot better for me than He-Man, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm not going to say I'm a huge fan of either, but if I had to pick, I'd go Thundercats. The premise for this series of basically Mumm-Ra trying to find some kind of a weapon that could go up against the Sword of Omens, and he comes across P-Man's Sword of Power. I'm like, okay, that's not a bad concept for a crossover. Then I read the issue. This was one that there were just a lot of things about this didn't really kind of work for me, starting off with Mumm-Ra being the narrator. Like, that's a very interesting choice, because you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say, since he's neither He-Man nor the Thundercats, he's going to lose. I mean, he's one of the big villains. He's going to lose. So it was just something that started on a weird note. I don't remember if in the Thundercats cartoon we ever really had the ancient spirits of evil give Mumm-Ra direction the way they seem to be doing here. Maybe they did, and I just don't know. But it's like, okay, that's new. But it works. We'll go with that. But this was one where I didn't feel they gave either the Thundercats or He-Man and his group a really strong kind of intro into the story. A good, you know, for if you're only a Thundercats fan, would this introduce you to He-Man? If you're only a He-Man's fan, would this really introduce you to the Thundercats? For me, it kind of failed on both directions that way. Most of this issue was mainly Mumm-Ra versus Prince Adam, not even necessarily He-Man for part of it. And I thought they massively overplayed their hand in that fight with what happens to Prince Adam there. So there were just aspects of this that didn't really jive well with what expectations I had, and they weren't particular expectations or really strong expectations, but there's an almost by the numbers aspect of certain things you kind of gotta do in a crossover, and that's, you know, do a strong introduction to both sides, not necessarily in the first issue, but they had the opportunity here, you know. Tell me this worked wonderfully for you.
Oh no. What I really wanted out of this was, hey kids, remember this cartoon? Well, let me remind you who everybody is.
Huh?
And here's that whimsy and wonder that you experienced as a child. And I want to tell you that story, a new story that you don't know, with all your favorites from both of those shows. Won't this be fun? Let's go on a little journey. And instead, it didn't do that. It kind of fell for that same thing that the Firefly comic that we reviewed not so long ago, where it kind of expected you to have the Stargate Atlantis, yeah, where it kind of expected you to have just finished the last season and watched it a couple of times and then picked up the comic and you were ready to go. Well, you know, not a lot of us have been watching these cartoons for 30 years or so I thought it could have done a much better job of reintroducing us to everybody. This is a 6-issue miniseries. I think you really need to get everybody on the pages, introduced strongly, so that we care about the right people and do that in this first issue. I think they drug their feet here, and it's either going to be a very lopsided story, or they're going to get to it eventually and kind of shake it around and kind of spread the love a little bit later. But I think it's going to be too bad because there's not going to be anybody left to read that story. It's I didn't like the way it came out of the gate. I thought it really kind of stumbled.
I would agree. I think the writing was the weak part here. There were one or two things with the art I might take issue with, but the story itself was the weakness.
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned, and as I was alluding to earlier, we don't really get a strong introduction for here's He-Man, here's his friends, here's everybody, here's his status quo. It's just, hey, you remember the cartoon? Great, you must know all of this already. Let's just go with Given. You know, and same with the Thundercats. When they show up, a couple of them get named, but it's just boom. You know who these guys are, right? And there's a little bit of a laziness in the writing there. But what really set me off with the writing goes from the very first caption. You may not know what to look at them here, the yada, yada, yada. Okay, that phrase or a very strong variation thereof is used like four times in this. You know, it may not look like much upon first sighting, but, you know, it's like, okay, that's an odd way to kind of, you know, introduce Eternia or something. And it was so such a writing crutch there that every time, you know, when it got used again and again, it's like, that's where you're going here? And then with the minimal interaction with the Thundercats, because they're really kind of the guest stars in this issue, setting them up for a stronger introduction next issue, presumably. I'll be honest, there was a point there I wasn't convinced there was going to be a He-Man for them to get introduced to next time because of what happened with him there. And the just shrugging off of some stuff in the course of the story, I'm like, well, there goes any both suspension of disbelief or any real sense of danger for some of these characters. Because, well, if they can have that and just kind of brush it off, and I don't want to give away exactly what happens, but it's one of those you've got to be kidding me sort of moments. And I think it was meant to be really cool, but it was something that just the writing, it's like, how did that get past an editor? How did Freddie Williams, the artist here, not just say, seriously, you've got to be kidding me. This is what you want?
And I think, you know, we kind of saw it coming down the pike there. And I'm not sure who besides Prince Adam was fooled by this helpful stranger.
That wasn't a stranger.
Coming in and wasn't. What do you mean it wasn't a stranger?
The person coming in saying, you know, no, don't turn into He-Man right now, is the sorceress who is one of his most trusted allies. So I can see him saying, oh, you don't want me to do this? You want this with the sword? Okay. The fact that didn't turn out well for him is, okay, a bit of a surprise. Presumably he hasn't really encountered shapeshifters. I think that's not true. I'm sure He-Man probably has. Prince Adam probably has too. They're sort of one and the same, although clearly not.
I don't ever remember Prince Adam being as inept either. But, you know, maybe he was, and maybe that I was just lost on me as I was watching the show, but I don't remember him being this inept.
Agreed. To me, they were always
doing
kind of...
Where was she introduced as his closest ally?
Well, she's not introduced that way, but he calls her Sorceress by name, and she is one of the more recognizable characters in the franchise.
Mm.
But again, to your point, you haven't watched the cartoon lately.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whenever she was kind of his Merlin, if you will.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Again, could have been better introduced, and therefore, for people, again, if you're only a Thundercats fan, how would you have known this? You wouldn't, you know, but then what bothered me here is they were going for kind of, you know how in older Superman stuff, there's kind of the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he's Clark Kent, but nobody else knows it kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And he's playing the bumbling buffoon or whatever at times. I think I'm not going to say they did that necessarily exactly like that in the He-Man cartoons, but there was a, you know,
Prince that sounds familiar. Yeah.
Prince Adams is, you know, a little bit unimpressive because he's trying to be unimpressive.
Yes.
You know, but he also is He-Man. He's got that inner strength, inner power. Whereas they're almost doing like a Shazam kind of a thing here where Prince Adam and He-Man may as well be two physically different people. So I was, again, I'm not steeped in the He-Man mythology. Maybe what they're doing is plays into that or whatever. But I thought they overplayed their hand at one point with what had happened to Prince Adam. Immediately undercut that And then everything that went on with Mumra kind of no longer seems to matter by the end of the issue. And they're going to go, I don't know, is Skeletor going to go fight the Thundercats next time? I mean, presumably the Thundercats are going to try to do something about all of, you know, what's going on. It just, there were some problems with the writing. It could have been something that really got me jazzed about both Thundercats and He-Man. Wow, I should go check out those cartoons. It's been forever since I've watched them or something. And I came out of it thinking, how are they going to go another five issues with this?
Hey, I mean, fundamentally, the audience is either someone who's nostalgic for these properties or someone who has heard about them or maybe hasn't, but just wants to check it out. Neither one of those audiences, both of those audiences need to be spoon-fed a little bit in this first issue. They need to be reminded of who everybody is. And I don't know why you would not do that. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Well, and the Thundercats really got the short end of this script. They are in 3 pages of the story, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, they're hardly in it at all. So if you're coming at it for them, you're going to be disappointed. This could have and should have been so much better. Not the worst thing I think DC's done with the Thundercats over the years.
I don't know. I can't tell.
They have one or two that was doing a little bit more of a mature take on things than I feel was appropriate for the property. So they at least tried to keep the tone and style more in line. But to me, this was something that wouldn't have been that hard to do. Simple, just almost literally a by-the-numbers crossover. And it would have been, it's not great, but it wasn't bad. Here, there are some things that I actively looked at, and it's like, there's some problems with the writing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I gave it a D+. I won't be reading anymore. I know it's only a 6-issue miniseries, but this was a sample for me, and I was hoping for better, and I didn't get it. Don't recommend it.
I went with a D. It was not my initial rating, but the more I thought about it, the more outraged I was about various aspects of it.
Yeah.
Particularly some of what they did there with Prince Adam. It's like, really? Wow. It undercut any sense of credibility the storyteller had. If people are reading it, I would love to hear what they think. Hopefully it's working a lot better for some other people. Maybe they're a little bit more forgiving of one or two story points than I was. Maybe the, you know, well, you may not know what to look at it kind of phrase that kept popping up. Maybe they didn't even notice that.
Maybe they just marathoned a couple of seasons of the shows and are coming right off of that and grab this comic.
If it was something that was steeped in the mythology and you had to have the continuity, I could see where that would help. But I would think if you've done that, well, I guess then you're not coming into it fresh. You don't need anybody to be reintroduced because you know all these people.
Yeah.
That's fair, and that's not an uncommon problem for a licensed sort of a thing to have. I mean, all the Star Trek novels pretty much take it, you know who Kirk is.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Well, there's this scene where he stumbles out of bed. He's late. He comes into this throne room, and on each side of him are all these characters. And I recognized one or two, but I bet you most of them have been in the show. And I just don't know who is who. But I could have been much more interesting if we could have had a little, you know, here's who everybody is page.
Almost a mini kind of who's who in the He-Man universe, who's who in the Thundercats universe.
Something to help us out, yeah.
Well, I recognize that most of the characters have definitely been in that show. I didn't recognize who they were, but I was never that steeped in the He-Man stuff.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of kind of, you know, Man-at-Arms was one of the lead characters, but they were like further fringe. They'd show up 2 or 3 times sort of a deal.
Is this a DC proper book? Is this some kind of offshoot?
It is its own kind of little thing. He-Man is a Mattel property. The Warner stuff owns the Thundercat stuff, but it's not like in the DC universe or anything.
At this point, have you pre-ordered half of them?
Yes.
Okay.
I will almost certainly
condolences.
Continue with it, but there's a certain kind of train wreck aspect to that.
Yeah.
Of just, you know, how much worse can it get?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm convinced it can get much worse. So I just was disappointed, and, you know, I wasn't expecting this to be, you know, absolutely brilliant or anything, but to not introduce the characters, to do what they did, disappointed me.
Yeah, well, I'm interested because I know we had a crossover between Planet of the Apes and Star Trek that started really slowly. And for me, it started really slowly for me. But by the end, you know, you said it was really crackling and had really kind of righted the ship and was a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have that sense that that's a possibility here.
I think with that, they leaned heavily in one franchise direction at first, and it took a little bit to get into the other one. Here, I think they've just made some fundamental mistakes, regardless of leaning too heavily in the He-Man direction and kind mm-hmm. of giving the Thundercats virtually, you know, a token appearance.
Yeah.
So it's not just that it's unbalanced, it's that it was actually bad. So we'll see what happens. I'll see what happens. You probably won't.
Oh, no, you'll let me know.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is Champions number one. This is the first Champions book they've done since, like, the 70s, because they lost the trademark for a while. They apparently worked with Dennis Maloney of, I think the current publishing name is Heroic Publishing, but it's undergone, like, three different names over the years. This is written by Mark Waid. We've got Humberto Ramos as penciler. This is featuring Ms. Marvel, the Ultimate Spider-Man, Nova, Hulk, and Viv, the daughter of the Vision. Champions was the right title for this. I'm glad they got the rights to it back and used it, because the basic premise here is some of the younger heroes, notably the Ultimate Spider-Man, Nova, and Ms. Marvel, are kind of unhappy with the older heroes and how they're doing all this infighting and all the stuff from Civil War, too, and they just want to go and be heroes and do the right thing for the right reasons. They want to be champions. And they set it up pretty well. I think they did a good job here. I mean, it's Mark Waid, so I'm not surprised that it was well written. He's got a good sensibility. I think he handles these characters well. And he's taking kind of the younger half of the all-new, all-different Avengers and spinning a new team out of it. And one that I think has a suitably different take on it than both the Avengers and many of the teen books that we've gotten over the years. This doesn't feel like just another New Warriors or Young X-Men or anything like that. It seems like its own thing.
I think they did a really good job telling us why. Mm-hmm. Why does this need to be yet another group? Why does this need to be another team? And it's, you know, it's the best use of the Civil War event. You know, they're as sick of it as all we are. You know, they can't believe what's going on, and the fracture that happened between the heroes and not wanting to fight other heroes anymore. I mean, I love that. And, you know, the core group of Nova, Ms. Marvel, and Ultimate Spider-Man, that's really a cool trio there.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy the use of Viv Vision. She was great over in this over in the Vision series, and I guess I'm pretty sure she makes it through that series since she's over here in this one. So I won't have to worry about her in issue 12. That's good, because I really like her. And I'm not a big fan of the Amadeus Cho Hulk. But in here, he was used well, and I really like that. I think this did a really good job of establishing why these guys need to work together and why they need to be the ages they are. And it was just really well established. And I really respect the writing here and the job that Mark Waid did.
Yeah, I think having the younger heroes kind of before they've gotten jaded and cynical and such is a lot of what makes this book work. It was a little disappointing the way Amadeus Cho the reason he wanted to bring in the Vision's daughter, of essentially, she'd make a great database. It's like, well, treat her as a person, not as a computer. But
yeah, and oh, by the way, she has all the same powers as her dad.
Yeah.
So watch it.
But it also makes this feel that much more like an all-new, all-different Avengers spinoff, because even though the Vision's not in the team, his daughter is, and there's that kind of connection. What I liked was near the end, we get cameos of a couple other characters that may either join the team or not, I don't know, but they seem like they would fit in well.
Yeah, the team got, doubled in size there at the end, possibilities.
I don't know that they're actually going to join. I could see Moon Girl... she doesn't, age-wise, she seems like she'd fit, but her genius is kind of duplicate with, she seems to duplicate Cho. she's smart like him, and with the devil dinosaur, she's got the strength kind of a thing like Hulk, so they seem like they'd be redundant with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think bringing in the new Falcon, he seems a little old for this mix, and entrenched enough on the periphery of what's going on with Civil War that I don't know that he would fit well. But I was expecting the young Cyclops to be in this issue, and all he got was a one-panel cameo. And then the new Wasp, I think, could be a fun addition to the team.
Yeah, and the new Iron Man. But I think they need to keep it a comfortable group and not get too big. That drives me nuts when they get too unwieldy with too many characters. Five is good. Don't get any bigger than that.
I would keep it with the core group, but I would have it be Champions the team and Champions the movement. And that movement has other characters that are kind of going along with the type of stuff they're trying to do, and they're not officially part of the team, but
yeah,
they're affiliated loosely.
And you know, that was really effective the way they did, you know, they did the Champions hashtag and got people on board and a lot of support and groundswell. And I was surprised how effective that was on the page. It really worked for me. And I thought that's, it really made me feel good. It was really a good moment in the comic, and really propelled it into what could be next. And I just really liked the way that these guys work together, the reasons they're working together, the fact that they're not these jaded billionaire tech geniuses. I mean, for the most part, makes it nice. They're different. They have flaws. They're young. They make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more interesting to read. And really thought the art was fantastic. Really great first issue.
Yeah, and again, I think this is the right creative team for it. I think Humberto Ramos, his art style works well with younger characters because there's a kind of a looseness to the art that fits. And I think Wade, it's, you know, he's such an experienced writer, but he's also kind of so in touch with his inner child in all the right ways that these characters act their age. They don't act how an older person thinks a younger person would act or whatever. It fits naturally. He's really able to capture the sensibilities of a wide range of characters. And it's not like the old, you know, 60s Teen Titans where you've got, you know, people well out of their teens doing the hip swinging teen, you know, lingo or whatever wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is, again, one where they could have used almost any title for this team, but it would not have had that moment at the end land as perfectly as it did with this team being going by the name Champions.
And the fact that, you know, they have had a powder puff of a villain in this one. You know, there wasn't a real challenge here, but you know, what kind of crimes this person was trying to perpetrate resonated with this youthful group. And, you know, after beating this guy, there was a real question as to, well, one of these guys is going to just snap this guy's neck and there won't be any justice system here. And I don't think it was a foregone conclusion right away that they were going to do the right thing because of the heinousness of the crime. And the fact they're young and impulsive. Now, ultimately, they're the best of the good guys. They're really good people and good characters. And so they're not going to do that. But I think there was a question there for a while that made for really good storytelling.
Well, it was nice that the villain was one of those clear black and white kind of issues. There is no real gray shade to be had here. He was doing something. Yeah, he was evil. He deserved punishing. He deserved serious punishing. But this was also a really great moment for the Ms. Marvel character.
Yeah.
Because she stepped up to the plate and really drew an ethical line that's very much in keeping with what we've seen in her own title, but it put her into a leadership position in this group. And it's fun to have seen the character grow from neophyte, brand new hero to one capable of assembling and leading a team like this.
Yeah.
It's part of what made this title, or this issue, work was not only the brilliance of this creative team, but how much they were able to leverage of what has happened with the backstory of Nova, Ultimate Spider-Man, Ms. Marvel, to a lesser degree, the Amadeus Cho and Viv Vision characters.
But there was a great cameo where they pop over to Papa Vision's house. And, you know, that was great. That was great. And it was current and it was within the current continuity. And there wasn't any problems there with the crossover. Obviously, Mark Waid does his homework and knows what's up. And I respect that. He knows that what's happening throughout the universe. And he's not going to make any mistakes that we see in every other comic nowadays. That people just don't know what's going on. The editors don't catch it. But this was really executed well. And I want them to keep the group small or keep the groups that are highlighted in a certain issue small enough to where they can still do those interactions in their worlds, touch on those things, and give us that extra little bit of realism. Realism.
What was fun with that scene is Waid not only knew where the characters were at, he knew who knew what and who didn't know what.
Yeah.
And just starting with the, you know, the Hulk saying, "I'll knock," and they're like, "No, no, it's a Hulk knocking. He's going to blow the house down," kind of a thing. But yeah. Then when the Vision answers, we get the reaction shot of the younger former Avengers, and then they look at the Hulk. He's like, "You brought us here? Seriously?" Kind of a, you know, because he doesn't know their relationship with him, yada, yada. It played off of what's going off of a couple of different books, some of which is Mark Waid's own stuff, some of which is other writers.
Yeah.
It's just, to me, he's using continuity in a really good way.
It's very rewarding for us as readers. You know, there are times when we'll read these and I get a sense that you and I, certainly you, sometimes me, know way more about what's going on in the current continuity than the creative team does, including the editors. And it drives me nuts. So I respect that when they do this and do it so well, and you know, it needs to be rewarded and needs to be read. And it's definitely could work for all ages, but it worked for me, and I'm not all ages. This really great launch comic.
Yeah, I will admit to being, you know, curious as to was this going to be any good or not, not having any particular expectations, much less high ones. But this really blew the doors off of what I was expecting out of this kind of a book with these characters. And I'm looking forward to it maintaining that quality. This could very easily be one of the top selling books at Marvel just based on quality. Whether it turns out that way or not, it's another matter. But you've got a recognizable, strong creative team. You've got a strong group of characters, and you've got a story that pulls together so beautifully, so well, so strongly, that it deserves to do well. For me, this is an A rating. No two ways about it.
Yes, a solid A, and I really enjoyed this. Yeah, again, this was, I believe, Now Champions. So this is part of a new launch that Marvel's doing. I had lower expectations than maybe I should have coming in. And not only did it exceeded most of my high expectations that I have for books. I was very impressed by the execution here from both writing and art, but especially the writing. This thing was well constructed and then well executed, and a great number one issue, and really benefited from a few extra pages.
Yeah. It's funny because I think this would have worked equally well as a zero issue kind of forming the team. But it was just a solid issue regardless of what numbering they wanted to put on it. I'm glad they were able to make this pull together just in general and under this particular name. I think if they had called it almost anything else, again, that moment at the end would have worked, but not as strongly.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Mm-hmm.
This is Romulus number one. It's from Image Comics. We've got Brian Hill on the writing and Nelson Blake on the art. This is not a title I pre-ordered. This is one I got the PDF copy of off the Image Press site because you had said, "Hey, let's review this." So yes, I've got a lot of reading to do, but let's add more to it. That was what you were thinking.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad you did. This was a fun read. I like the art style. There was something about the beginning where, you know, we're going through just a flash forward of her life from age 10 to about, 18 or 20 or some such. But it hits the highlights. It gives us a good sense of the childhood she's had, Ashlar, the main character here, her relationship with her mother, It surprised me that it took somewhere around, what, 10 pages or something before we get to the present day where she's like 22 or something. So there was a lot of backstory to get through, but it was good backstory. It was a lot of it was tell, but they showed enough of it that I didn't feel it was all it wasn't exposition. But it definitely gave us a framework for enjoying the present day stuff. Which was really just essentially a scene or two there at the end. I think it was all one scene.
That's funny, because I really thought they could have spent a little bit more time with Mom. And I didn't think they quite gave that enough emphasis, because, you know, there was kind of a throwaway line about, you know, the people that are after them, just take a pill. They haven't been trained since birth for this. So there was some more battles and skirmishes I was hoping to get to establish just how much of a difference there is when this is all you know from birth to just beating a thug that's got that pops some extra pills to be tough. So I was hoping for a little more of that to just show.
We'll still get more. I think they couldn't have spent much more time on it in this issue because they got to get to the present day stuff. But she saves, and it seems like she's about to recruit this Nicholas guy. So, presuming he's the other half of the regular characters we get here, at some point he's going to have questions of what's going on with these guys, whatever. And they could do some good kind of either single issue or whatever stories. Well, here's how they pop the pill and do whatever. Here's how I first met them. You know, they can get more of the backstory in.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave enough that I felt like at the end, I have a good enough sense of who Ash is and care about her that it's like, you know, okay, I buy into what you're doing here and I want to know more.
Yeah, you should, because she's forever Carlisle from Lazarus. So she's very recognizable if you're enjoying Lazarus. I feel like they are very, very similar in creation, execution, and their body type, everything.
I think we could go through, I have to do a little research on this, but I'm going to say another half dozen Image comics with the lone female protagonist who's the amazing fighter, etc. You know, the rough childhood, Epic Kill, I think, is another one.
That's not really current, though.
Not current, but if you were to go through the Image back library, there are things that fit the high concept of this fairly closely, depending how judiciously and carefully you craft that high concept, but it's good execution.
Yes, yes.
So I'm not saying it's highly original story material, because you're right, it's not. But it's fun.
Definitely fun. Is the goal saving, was it 5 million or 5 billion?
Billion.
It was billion with a B?
Billion with a B.
Boy, that's a tall order. I don't know enough about what that mission is and how they're going to go about that. So it was really intriguing to me, and I was hoping to get more and more. But yeah, there wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough time in this first issue, but it didn't feel like they were wasting time. Like I said, I wanted more of this era and that era, and they did things very well to start us off on the right foot with her, show us clearly who the bad people are. So it was clearly who we're rooting for, and propel us into that next issue. I think it was really well handled.
I expect that next issue is going to go into some clarity of who are these 5 billion and what do they have to be saved from? Mm-hmm. Why only 5 billion? Why not everybody? To me, it seems like a little bit of the let's depopulate the planet to just the people we like sort of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they've given us enough here to get a sense of the trajectory of the series, even if not the specifics, the general tone, style, and direction. And we've had a lot of first issues that we come out of it and it's like, yeah, they didn't really do that. So I was very pleased with this. Again, I'm expecting a bit more exposition moving forward. I think that's part of why she's got to recruit somebody like Nicholas, is have somebody to ask some questions. But I could easily see where this could get into a fairly good cadence of they go do a mission, we get some flashback stuff, or I don't know. I mean, there are a couple of different ways it could go, but it was well written and well drawn. Like I said, I did not pre-order this. I don't have a print copy, but I'm probably going to see what I can do about that unless I decide my reading list is full enough as it is.
Which it very much could be.
Very much could be, which is why it's like, geez, this is a good book. Do I want to add it or not? Do I have room for it? because it's certainly worth adding. There's no two ways about that.
Now, this isn't a perfect character by no means, our main character and her mother. Although misled, they do follow through on some very heinous acts early on in those first 10, 12 pages that John was referring to. And so I thought they did a good job of, yeah, this is what they were trained to do. And they recognize the error of that and now are going to work to rectify that. I think that could have been mishandled or glossed over, but I thought it was really well done and made it a little more nuanced and gave it a little more weight for what it actually was, because there was some real tragedy there.
Yeah, absolutely. She did not have a nice childhood, and it was even worse for many of the people she encountered. There's a little bit of an X-23 vibe to it in that respect.
Yep, I could definitely see that, yeah.
Raised as a killer, but realized the error of her ways sort of a thing. It's got some story weight behind that that I'm looking forward to seeing them play with. You know, where does she draw what lines and why? What would she do if she ever finishes this mission? I mean, she's an interesting enough character. I want to see where it goes.
Yeah, and I mean, the bad guys pretty much wiped out all her compatriots pretty quickly in a very short span of time, including her mother. It was over the course of maybe a year. They were all wiped out. And so, you know, what's going to make her able to survive these attacks more than everybody else that was trained the way she was? So I'm really kind of curious as to how they set her apart and why is she so much better than the rest of them? I'm curious about that.
Whether it's her or whether her mom just knew something and got them out of the way or whatever. Because you're right. In the span of about a year, the rest of that order was just eliminated.
Yeah.
Or so we're led to believe. Maybe one or two of them survived. They did.
That would be fun. That would be a good twist and fun for some future plot lines as well. I do like the Nelson Blake art, I believe his name is. I like that art. Brian Hill, of course, been doing a lot of writing recently over on Postal and Eden's Fall. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of on the map now and on my radar. So I expected it to be pretty solid, and it was. It was really well written, and there's a lot of stuff to like here.
Yeah. I wish they could have tightened up maybe a little bit of the backstory and gotten to more than just the one scene in present day. But they covered enough ground and whatnot. It's not a fatal flaw by any stretch of the imagination. I'm going to go with an A- on this one. I think if I had a little bit better idea of the people she's up against and maybe what this mission is, that might have been enough to get it up a little higher. But still, it's a very strong book and one I do recommend.
Yeah, I feel all that. I think there is a little more that they didn't quite tell us that could maybe really seal the deal for someone who's just sampling this. And, you know, there might not be enough here for them to say, okay, why do I care? What is this over? What is this mission? And why do I care? So for me, it's a notch below, especially a notch or two below where the Champions book was. So for me, it is a B+, but it's a really good read and something that I'm going to read the next issue of.
That makes sense. I can see that. So I have not caught up on my reading, but man, I'm close. I have 6 comics left from last week. Out of the 45 I've got this week, I've read 9 of them. So these 2 plus 7 others, because again, Romulus didn't count towards that. So I've got a total of 42 left, which is less than the 45 new comics I got this week. So again, if I just had a little bit more time, I could have finished off all of last week's. It's just like I said, I got about a half dozen stragglers from there, and then I got to finish this week.
They all blending together, or do you have some real standouts?
A lot of them are blending together, and it's easy to get kind of the order of events a little muddled. One that did stand out was the Teen Titans Rebirth issue. I thought it was a very interesting way to assemble a superhero team, and it also struck me, particularly the Starfire character, as being more old school Starfire than New 52 Starfire. Mm. She wasn't her bubbly self that we'd come to see both in the Red Hood and the Outlaws series and in the Starfire series. And there were one or two other things that was referenced that implies a backstory with her and another character that I don't think they had previously established in the New 52. Not against it or whatever, it's just this isn't the same character I think we'd been reading recently. Let me rephrase. It is literally the same character we've been reading lately, but it's a different personality for said character.
Okay, so she's less easy?
She's more focused. She's more intelligent. She's not just going wherever the breeze takes her sort of a thing. She's got, I don't say an agenda, but she's more focused is the way I would put it than what we had seen in her own series.
Mm-hmm.
But I had said there, I thought she was much more based on the cartoon than on the comic at that point. Kind of the bubbly, almost airheaded sort of character. So that stood out. Trying to think what else. Again, a lot of it's blending together, catching up on a lot of the Civil War stuff. That's they got to wrap that up. That's just going on too long at this point. It's not even a question of is it good or not. It's just they're hitting the same basic story beats a few too many times. I'm trying to think if anything else really jumped out at me. Those are the main ones. There comes a point where I read enough stuff that it all kind of blurs together, and it takes something to really stick in my brain. Because I read through, I don't know, over 100 comics over the last couple of days.
Yeah, it can definitely do that. I get it completely. There was a launch by Image, Surgeon X, which deals with overuse of antibiotics and the way that they get prescribed a lot more loosely than perhaps they should, at least from this comic's viewpoint, and the ramifications of that and the fallout from that, which I really unique take. I'd not seen that in a comic before. I thought that was kind of cool. Dream Police finished up finally. This is a Straczynski book that started maybe in 2013.
A while ago. I read the first issue or two.
Yeah. And issue 12 just put a bow on it. So it was a long and winding road. And, you know, I'm pretty quick to complain when creators drop the ball and don't get these books out. And not that it excuses it, but he did go into at length in the back matter exactly what's going on in his life. And the fact that his eyesight was leaving, he was losing it. He had two degenerative diseases in his eyes that was causing him to where he used to be able to do 12 hours of work and get 12 hours of output. It now took 12 hours to get 2 hours of output because of his eyesight and the fact that he could not the surgeries because he had two things wrong with his eyes. He had to choose
one surgery
or the other because you couldn't do both. And so he had to wait. So he just waited. And with bad eyesight until technology and science caught up to the point where they could fix both problems that he had. So it was an amazing tale of just what's been going on in his life for years now that nobody really knew.
Yeah, that's a shame he's had to go through that. I've had some issues with some of his comic book writing. It didn't always work for me, but I am an immense fan of his work on the Babylon 5 TV series. Out of the 110 episodes, he wrote 97 or more of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the overwhelming majority of them. And those that he didn't write, he had strong oversight thereof. And it was just one of the best written sci-fi TV shows that I think have ever come out. It was well thought out. It was premeditated storytelling in all of the best ways. And again, the prolificness of a guy who is overseeing the show and the writing staff to have the time to be doing the writing for the, you know, overwhelming majority of the episodes and such while keeping everything else going. Just crazy. So definitely very talented guy, very hard worker. Hate to see it when creative talent like that is inflicted with illnesses that directly slow down or in some cases for a while flat out stop their output.
I think it changed him significantly. I'm glad I finished this because this is his last comic. He's going to leave the industry and he's going to write novels and plays. I'm going to try his hand at that now in a new phase. So this might be a fun read in a collected work, all 12 issues. You didn't have to wait out the single issues, so you're going to get that. You don't have to worry about that. So, but that was that's interesting. You know, he's switched up his careers a couple of times now. Obviously, you just mentioned his TV work, and then his work in comics, and now he's going to go try his hand something else.
Oh, and he's done films. He did a couple that I think even won some major awards and such.
Yeah.
So he's had a very strong career. But I think doing something like books would be good, because it would be fun to see where he has literally complete control over everything, because it's literally just the printed page at that point. What wonderful things could come out of his creative imagination. So this episode, the preview spotlight number 8, will have gone up the Wednesday before this episode. That means the October teleconference will have been on the 15th of October. So the next round of preview spotlight clips are going to be due November 5th, that Saturday morning, first thing. Already have one of those clips, actually.
Dang, that's a new record.
Yeah, it is. It was kind of cool. And then the comic book page teleconference after that will be on Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. Central. Again, we're going to talk about really whatever people bring up. Comics, movies, television, you know, whatever. So those teleconferences are always a lot of fun. Join when you can, leave when you have to, sort of a deal. You don't need to stay there for the whole time.
You do.
Yeah, I'm hosting the thing, so it kind of helps. But that means if people kind of drop off for a bit and it's late, I may go, and if people come later, I may not be there. You know, I'm committing to being there at 7 and going for as long as it goes. But there does come a point where it's like, I do need some sleep or some reading time. But yeah. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Supergirl number 2 from DC, Darth Vader number 25 from Marvel, and Reborn number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.